Good morning and welcome back to Nahyami. Today we are learning through Perek Zayin Megillas Esther, the seventh chapter of the book of Esther. This is a critical chapter because this is the moment where Haman himself is foiled and killed. Our section, our Perek, is only one section and 10 psukim long. In this Perek, we have Haman now being pulled out of his state of shock of having taken Mordechai through the streets, and before he has a chance to collect himself, the Sarisim come and they pull him to the Sa'uda. And at the Sa'uda, the king finally says to Esther, this is now the third encounter he's having with Esther. He wants to know what it is that's on her mind. And he says to her, he says, Ma she'lo seich Esther amalkovit yinasein lach. What is it? Whatever it is that you want, I'll give it to you. Ad chatziyam achus se'as, until half the kingdom it will be done. And she gets up, she makes this incredible speech. She says, Im motzasi chen b'neich ha'melech, if I've found favor in your eyes, v'imal ha'melech tov, it's good for the king, t'inosin inav shi b'she'el ha'si v'ami b'vakash ha'si, save my soul, my request, and my people, and my supplication, k'inim karnu ani v'ami. I and my people have been sold, la'hashmid la'arog u'la'beid, to be decimated, to be killed, v'il la'avodim l'shvachos, nim karnu hecherashti. But if we'd been sold into slavery, I would have kept quiet. That would not have been sufficient grounds for pain that I would have to mention in front of the king. The king is astonished. He says, who is this? Who is this person that has decided to do such a thing? And she turns her hand and she says, Ish tsarva oyev Haman hara hazeh, this evil man, Haman. And Haman is absolutely stunned, is wordless. The king can't really process this. He gets up in his anger and he goes to the Ginas Abison. He goes to the garden, and at this point Haman now gets up to beg for his life in front of Esther. As the king is returning, he falls into the bed that Esther is reclining upon, and you're making an advance on the queen while I'm in the palace. And as he said that, they cover the face of Haman. That is clearly a means to say that this person will be eliminated. And at this point in time, Charvona chips in, a person we've not met up till now, and he says, you know, there's this tree, this gallows, which Haman set up in his garden to kill Mordechai, to hang him upon it. It's 50 amas high, and the king says, hang him on it. And Haman is hanged, and the king's anger subsides. This is the end of the parak. A few things just to ponder over here. One is the way she words her request is the most strange way of wording a request. If she really were to want to convince the king, she should really play upon her strengths, which is her relationship to the king, and say, save us. What's this whole business about? Sold, not sold, if we've been sold to slavery. So Ibn Ezra says that when it says the word nimkarnu, we're sold, it means sold out. It means to say lashon mesira, it's being handed over. So what she's saying, she says, you know, she's making a play on words. She's essentially saying, we've been sold to death. But if we've been sold just to shackles, to slavery and servitude, then I would have kept quiet because it wouldn't have been enough. It's interesting that that Ibn Yahya, in his Pirush on the Megillah, says an interesting thing. He says, you know, I see the reason that I need to stand up now is because there's two bad things which have gone over here. The one is that this is a personal vendetta which has turned into a national catastrophe. And the second is that he, this terrible man, is profiting from it. Meaning to say, ultimately, it's his own personal gain that is occurring over here, which is why we've been sold to death, so to speak, because he is going to all the loot, all the booty of the ransacking, the pillaging, the destructions, the pogroms that are going to ensue, is going to go to him and his cronies, and therefore that's the mechira, that's the selling which is being said over here. It's worthwhile noting that there is a very interesting pirush in the Nachal Eshkol. He quotes Rav Mordechai Etzban, who says that there's a tradition that whoever sells the Jews into slavery, the buyer will die, and whoever sells them to death, the seller, meaning the person who sent them to death, will die prematurely. So she says like this: if we've been sold into slavery, so the buyer, right, the person who's buying it, which is Haman, right, because he's the one who's facilitating this sale into slavery, he would have died, which would not have been worth. I wouldn't have interrupted your daily activity to protect Haman's life. But now that we're sold to destruction, the person who sold us to destruction, the signature on that document of destruction is yours, O king. and I could not let you be slated for destruction for facilitating such a thing. So in a certain sense, she's playing it as that the real victim over here is in fact the king, which is a different way of looking at it. It's worthwhile noting that Rabbi David Foreman has a very, very beautiful perspective on this. In fact, she is using the words of Yehuda. There's the idea of Yehuda when it came to the Yosef, when it came to the idea of the brothers were going to kill Yosef, but Yehuda says, Nimkarenu liYishmaelim, let's sell him instead to the Yishmaelim, to the Yishmaelites. And the word Nimkarenu is the same as Nimkarnu. It's the same, only two times in all of Tanakh that those letters appear in this particular permutation, although with different vowelization. And what she's essentially saying is she's harking back to that original statement and saying, you know what? The side of Leah, Shimon and Levi sold us into slavery instead of killing us. Well, you know what? I am in the same position. And if that it had just been being that the Jews were being sold, I from the tribe of Binyamin, from the tribe of the sons of Rachel, if it had been the other side was being sold, I could have kept quiet because I would have let them find the same end that they did to us originally. But now that it's death, now I will speak up. So she's poisoned by that memory. It's worthwhile noting there's another time in her second request in the next parak, which is also the words of Yehuda at a different point. Worthwhile thinking about a much bigger picture and perspective that Tanakh is trying to convey to us than perhaps the way we originally learned this in preschool and elementary. Another interesting thing is that who is she actually accusing? Chazal say an astonishing thing, that originally she picked up her finger to point it at Achashverosh, but the angel shifted her finger to Haman. Why is that? So the Bir Agrav, the Vilna Gaon, explains that one of the underlying themes in this Megillah is Achashverosh himself. Achashverosh is taking the seat of the Melech Malchei Hamlochim in this Megillah. He's the only Melech explicitly mentioned in the Megillah, and he seems to be the all-powerful figure in this Megillah. And in a certain sense, what Esther, who's so close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, he says almost in a Freudian way, right? In her psyche, she knows that the evil is stemming from this figure, Achashverosh, who is the all-powerful, who's supplanting HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the way that people look at life. But her finger is pushed by the angel to Haman, who's the facilitator, rather than essentially the real issue, which is Achashverosh himself. Fascinating perspective here. Now, what actually happened with Haman and Esther? The Gemara says that an angel pushed Haman onto the bed, so that this was a moment, and it could be the Da'at Mikra. Rav Moshe Chacham says it could be that this was. It doesn't mean to say an angel mamash, but it means to say that Haman overstepped his boundary in terms of begging and prostrating himself in front of the queen in a way that would not be natural were he to have his senses, and that's the angel over here, so to speak. HaKadosh Baruch Hu let him loose in an illogical way, which now brought upon the king's wrath. Who is this Charvona and what is he adding? Charvona is an interesting character. We only hear of him once in the Megillah, and he makes us eight at this point in time. So the Gra quotes Chazal, the Megillah, in Daf Megillah Daf Tes Zayin Amud Aleph, which says that Charvona was actually Echad Meha Sarisim. He was one of the Sarisim. What does that mean? So what the Gemara seems to be saying is that he was one of the Sarisim, says the Vilna Gaon, who was sent to bring Haman to the Suda. So when he arrived at the earlier this day to bring Haman to the Suda, he noticed this astronomically large gallows in the yard, which is why he knows about this. And that's what the Gemara is coming to answer. However, if you want to dig it a little bit deeper, it could be that Sarisim doesn't mean to say just the one who was sent to get Haman. It could actually mean, as the Torah Tamima suggests on this Gemara, that he was one in the plot with Haman. He was one of the original advisors of the king, and he was on Haman's side. He was friends with the Memuchan, and all the way through he had evil intent. And therefore, actually, he was on Haman's side until he saw the cards turn. When he saw that the cards turned, then he changed sides. And now he became actually adherent to the other side, which, you know, sounds in a certain sense like a wishy-washy person. But on the other hand, we have to appreciate what it means to make a suggestion in front of a person, in front of a king, who, if he just looks at you in the wrong way, your head will be removed within a moment. So you have to understand what a danger it is to even make such a suggestion. The Rav Moshe Chacham points out that he's clearly aware of the conversation between the Chachamim of Haman and Haman because he is able to talk about the intention of that gallows, not just the fact that there is a gallows in Haman's yard. And it could be that he's capitalizing on the fact that he sees the king going towards anger of Haman, so he takes advantage of being on the right side, even though even though it is a risk. It's worth knowing that in Masechet Sofrim, it tells us in the 14th parak that there's one text of the bracha which is said after the Megillah, which is Charvono Zachur Latov, that Charvono should be remembered for good, and that's in fact appears in our Shoshanas Yaakov piyut, which is fascinating because here you have a non-Jewish person who plays what we would call a insubstantial role. He only has one sentence that's memorable in the Megillah, and it could even be for his own benefit to save his own skin. But nonetheless, this was at the critical moment, and he's Zachur Latov. The last question just for this parak is that did Esther succeed? And the answer is yes and no. Because at this point in time, yes, Haman is dead, but his decree is certainly not dead. And from beyond the grave, he reaches back. And at this point in time, genocide is still slated. Esther has not yet received the answer to her question. She has pointed out that Haman was bad, and Haman has been taken care of. But she has not yet got the answer to her problems, which is the problem of ultimately Haman's decree. So this leaves us on a cliffhanger to understand how that will be averted. In the meantime, have a wonderful and meaningful day.